Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson, and we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy.
Insane in the membrane.
Hello, mate.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I've got a rotten, this horrible flu thing. I'm just at the tail end of it, so I apologise now for the coughing that
That's
will happen.
Mate. I've just had that. It's fucking brutal.
Oh, mate, I was out for 2 weeks, and I was just saying to Paul, I still can't hear at the minute, so I've got my hearing aids on full whack.
Oh, mate.
I'm struggling a bit, so if I ask you to repeat yourself, sorry about that.
That's fine, don't worry about that. It's all good.
I was going to say I cough when I laugh, but, you know, if it's your jokes, I'll be all right, won't I?
Ah, for fuck's sake, you know what?
Died already.
I had this... I was doing a podcast the other day for someone else, and they were asking me, like, my comedy influences, and I was talking about Norm Macdonald, and I went, oh, you know, he was a big influence on me. The fact that he could tell a story for about half an hour... And then the punchline would be really shit, but he didn't care. He just kept doing it. And then Kate, my missus from the kitchen, went, "Is that why you've got shit punchlines?"
Cheers,
cheeky
mate.
Cheeky fuckers.
You know it's out of love. You know it's out of love.
It's a working class thing, isn't it? If they're taking the piss, it means they like
you. Then they love you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how it is. And yeah, I do you know what? It looked like I was on my phone just dicking about, but I've had this sudden surge of just getting shit done. I'm like, fucking right. So
oh, give me some of that, will you?
It doesn't happen very often. When it does,
you have to make hay when the sun shines, right?
Yeah, exactly. And people keep going to me, oh, it's ADHD, mate. I'm going, if it is, I'm not going to go and get a diagnosis. I'm just not, all right? It is what it is. I don't need to label it. I'll be fine.
See, I felt the other way, because by labelling it for me made me go, oh, well, then I don't feel so shit about it because it's not my fault.
Well, that's it. I think there is an element of that. But I think also there's just a part of me. When I do pull my socks up, I'm all right. It's when I don't. It's when I just let it slip. I don't know if that's... I think that's just who I am. I think just sometimes...
Mate, we've had this discussion in the car. Yeah. You've got ADHD. Just fucking deal with it. Just accept it and move on.
I think all performers have. That's why we are this side of the wall.
I'm sure I've said this to you before. I'm more surprised by comedians that don't have ADHD than I am by ones who do. Why the fuck are they doing this job?
Yeah.
If they're able to do a normal job, do one.
You're just getting in the way, you fuckers. Well, but this flu thing, we had it. Kate and I had it over Christmas, and it was awful. It was like one of those things. You know, like you can feel something happening, and then you're like, "Well, I don't know if it's because you're busy and you kind of go, look, I ain't got time for it, or I don't know, or maybe it was just that wasn't what it was, but it was like Christmas Eve. And I'm like, I feel fucking dreadful. And then Kate was the same. And then we were just in bed for Christmas. It was horrible.
Oh, mate. I think I got it on Boxing Day. I went to a friend's house on Boxing Day. And lots of friends were there.
Yeah.
And one of them had a bit of a cold. And then the next day, like eight of us wiped out, or 2 days later. And Matt had a bit of a sore throat for a day. But I was completely, honestly, way worse than when I had COVID.
Yeah.
And I'm still, it's like over two, excuse me, over 2 weeks now, and I'm still got it, really.
I think last week was the first week I felt that I was on the mend. It's that it's that bad, and it is. Yeah, it's when I remember having COVID the first time, and just obviously not knowing what it was, because it was the weirdest feeling I've ever had.
Yeah.
Where you just had no energy, but you didn't feel like recognisably ill. You just knew something was up.
Yeah.
And you couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
You just had to just sort of lay there. It was weird.
Yeah. Well, this was a bit like that. At first, I was so convinced it must be COVID because it felt similar to when I had COVID. But then it just got... I was hallucinating and all sorts. It was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, this one's been horrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're on the way out of it now, so it's all good.
Yeah, absolutely. You just got to... Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep the fluids flowing. You got to keep that... Plenty of water, plenty of hot
That's
drinks.
It.
And just... You'll be all right. Honestly, next week, you'll start feeling better. It's a good couple of weeks. But, yeah. But the thing is, because you've got... Is it glue ear? Did you say you've got?
Yeah, that's it. So my ears are blocked and I can't clear them at the minute. And so, I mean, I wear hearing aids anyway.
Mm.
But at the moment, they're just... I've got them full blast and I can just about hear you. But I had a meeting with my agent yesterday. I went up to London. It was my first time out of the house, really, in a few weeks. And... we sat in this noisy cafe and I was like, I just can't hear you, mate.
Yeah.
I just can't hear you.
It's funny, isn't it? When, who was I with? So last night I was talking to a mate of mine and he's like that. If you go somewhere with him and it's busy, he can't talk to you. He has to be quiet. Otherwise he can't focus.
On
it. I think he's got ADHD as well. He's a tattooist and a jeweler. He makes his own jewellery. So.
Oh, wow.
So he's a creator as well. So he's creative. I think creative people have got ADHD. That's why we can't sit at a desk and shuffle
Absolutely.
Paper.
Absolutely. And why? Because when you get obsessed with something, you know, you say about being having to make the most of when you feel productive.
Yeah.
But I think those times come, and when those times do come, I'm productive to the detriment of everything else in my life. Like I'll forget to eat. I'll forget to do anything. I won't wash. I won't because I'm doing it. I'm in the zone, and I feel like I have to make the most of when that happens because it's so rare.
Yeah.
Then that everything else goes to shit around me.
Yeah.
And then you sort of come out the other side and go, my house is a tip. What's going on?
Yeah, I've got all the washing piled up. I haven't got any clean pants.
Yeah, yeah.
What I was doing, because I was so into I was so productive. I was sending the emails, booking guests for the podcast, and I was like properly into it. That I forgot I'm going on my honeymoon next week, and I'd put gigs in. I put gigs in. I'll do that.
You're a nightmare for that. So, didn't you have gigs like the day after your wedding?
That in my defence, that was that was because it was next up. And they said you really like your show, and we've had a space come up, but it's on this date.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Kate. I went, look, I know we're getting married on Monday, but this has come up on the Tuesday. What do you reckon? And she went, yeah, absolutely, fucking yeah. It's not like we're going anywhere. So we had the wedding. Luckily, I didn't get too shit faced. Every time I had a drink and I put it down, someone had it. So I think that worked as well in my favour, because then the next day we went up to Manchester and we recorded at the Frog and Bucket. So it was I wouldn't have taken a gig, like a gig. But
no, it was like, it's just fun to take the mickey out of your Rick. That's
do you know
really.
What? Do you know what though? I say that. I reckon I would have done.
Yeah, of course you would. You're saying all that in my defence. You're just lucky you had an excuse.
Yeah, I know. I'm so full of shit sometimes.
Yeah, you are. But I love hearing it. And nodding along, going, all right, Rich, yeah, you tell yourself that, mate. You tell yourself that. I believe you.
Do you know how many times I do that? I go through and I'm like, well, I need it. And then by the end of the sentence, I come back the other way and I go, actually, yeah, that's bollocks what I've just said. I have this like argument with myself throughout the sentence.
Do I mean that? Is that what I mean?
Yeah. I start off kidding myself, and then halfway through, I have this realization of what I'm doing, and then I go, "No, actually, you're talking shit, Rich. That's bollocks. You would have if they'd have given you 100 quid to go and do a gig, you'd have gone and done it. You fucking belly. Kate would still be in her wedding dress.
So are you doing a double that night?
Yeah,
I've
yeah,
got my
yeah.
wedding and 20 at the Frog and Bucket.
If someone had said to me, because you were there, we got married in Brighton,
yeah,
and we were at the party afterwards. And if someone had said to me, Rich, you about mate? Can you nip over and do this gig in Brighton for 100
you
quid?
Would have...
I would have probably just slid off, jumped in an Uber. and then nip back, and then everyone go, oh, you're right, mate. Oh, no, yeah, I was talking to blah, blah, blah.
Do you know, I'm laughing, but I know you would have done it. I don't doubt that for one millisecond. So, oh, I've got a dropout, a comedian. Are you about? Yeah, I'm on it.
Just don't post about it on social media.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't leave it unlisted, yeah? Cool, you've dressed up for this gig, Rich.
Yes, yeah. That's my new... Wow, what's with the flower in your lapel? Oh, God. This is the thing with comedians, isn't it? It's this. I think... I don't know if it's a working class thing again. Mm. It's that if someone offers you money, you go, I've got to take it, because I don't know if I'll get offered it again.
Well, I've been talking about this a lot recently, because I think it is a working class thing. It's a freelancer thing as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Worry that if you say no to something, they won't ask you again. And I know I'm really bad for that. And I end up saying yes to gigs that I know when I book them in. I know when I put them in my diary.
Yeah.
But when that comes around, I'm going to be really cross with myself that I've agreed to do that. Because, you know, I'm busy, or it's, you know, I've worked hard to get to a point where I don't have to drive 6 hours to do a gig for 50 quid or whatever, yeah. You know. But part of it is that feeling of who the fuck do you think you are turning down work? Because in my family, you don't turn down work.
Exactly.
You don't.
Yeah, no.
You know, and also like that feeling of, oh, you think you're too good for this gig, do you? You think you're too Billy Big Bollocks to go drive 6 hours to Manchester for an open spot or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Who do you think you are? Is that... There's part of that in it, not sort of valuing your own time and thinking that you're not, you know, it's difficult to put worth on yourself when you don't have a lot of self-confidence, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, to value your own time and stuff. So I think that's a big part of it. And yeah, it's just being a people pleaser. We're people pleasers. We're stand-up comics. That's exactly what we are. We go on stage and ask a room full of strangers to love us. You know, and we're addicted to that. We're addicted to strangers loving us. So when someone asks us to do something, our default is to go, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Because it will make you happy. Rather than, yeah, will it make me happy? And is it something I need to do?
Yeah. But I think the longer you do this, the more value you have in yourself. Do you know what I mean? You kind of, you get, like any job, the longer you do it, the better you get at it. And the more people in that industry like respect you because they recognise that you're good at it. Otherwise, you wouldn't still be doing it. You know what I mean? And so you do get to a point where you go, look, as much as I want to go to Manchester for 50 quid or whatever, I think I've done that now. And, you know, it's kind of, it's not being big, like you say, it's not Billy big bollocks or being big headed. It's like, I've done that. I've earned my place.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And the industry would not judge you for that. It's that voice in my head that judges myself for it or tells me that the industry will judge me for it, even though they wouldn't. You know, people would actually say, if I was being offered a gig, particularly with the, you know, way petrol prices are and stuff at the minute, you have to really justify driving a long way for a gig. It has to be financially worthwhile. It's your job. It's your what you pay the mortgage with, you know? And that shouldn't be something you feel bad about. But that voice in my head tells me people think you're up yourself. There's no evidence of that at all in the real world. Nobody's ever gone, oh, she thinks she's something that she wouldn't, you know, do this gig for minus money. no one thinks like that. But that voice in my head is always worried about what people are thinking of me.
Oh, definitely. There is that assumption that people are thinking about you at all when really they're not.
Oh, mate, yeah. And the amount of times I try and have a word with myself about that, where you have all these ideas of what people think about you or how they perceive you and all of that. You go, the truth of the matter is you haven't crossed their mind since the last time you saw them.
No.
You know, you haven't crossed their mind because they're busy people with lives and they think about the people they see day to day and they're not thinking about you.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there might be a time when, you know, they ask you to do something and you couldn't do it. Like, last minute, you might have let them down. And it would have been, they would have been mildly irritated at the time. But there's not a picture of you on the wall in their kitchen when they're throwing darts at it. And, you know, they're wandering around, wondering how they can get you back and hating you. They're just like,
that's what you're worried about, though, isn't it? Yeah. If you let someone down, that'll be it. That bridge burnt forever. That Kai cut forever. And I'm always sort of, I always have in mind that, that thing of, you know, I do bits of telly or whatever, but I don't take any of it for granted. And I think particularly with the comedy circuit, that's the grassroots. That's the thing where I think whatever happens with my career, that's the way I can go and make a living, is by going out on the circuit. And, you know, it's harder, getting harder and harder to make a living on the circuit as cost of living goes up and the fees stay the same. But it is something I could do. So I never want to take that for granted, and I never want to neglect that skill of being able to play the clubs and stuff. And I'm always aware of going, don't get cocky. Don't think that now you're a TV comic, you know, because one day you won't, you're not getting any younger. You're pushing 50, which, as you know, as a woman on telly is, I think, illegal. So, you know, make sure that you don't piss off the, or don't bite the hands that feed you, basically.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's funny, though. I think ageism is still a real problem in this industry. I saw a list of comedians, I think it's for Comedy Central, and I don't think there was anyone over the age of 40.
Yeah, it really is. I think for men and women, particularly for women, I think.
Well, they'll let one of you through.
Yeah, and it's if you, you know, if you're not young and or beautiful, what are you for? And an interesting thing I've noticed, I can hear my voice is getting really, I wish I had one of those voices that when you've got a cold was sexy. I haven't. I've got one that just sounds like a teenage boy. But anyway, I've had a cough and it's cleared it a bit. So that's
there you go. Lovely. Some of that mucus. That's
nice.
When I had it, I just kept fantasising about running my head under a hot tap. Just flushing out all the pipes.
You just think, right, in the human brain, there needs to be a point where you can go, okay, can you just stop making mucus now? Because I don't think we need it anymore. Like, this, the disease is gone.
Yeah.
Why are you still making all this stuff to fight it? It's gone now. Just stop it.
This is the thing. I've been cutting out. I thought maybe it's dairy. So I cut down on dairy. Then I thought it was bread. And so I'm cutting down on that. And then you're like, and then it's still there. And you're like, well, what am I supposed to do? Just drink water all day?
Yeah, basically, just, yeah.
Yeah.
You just got to sit it out. That's all you can do with stuff like that, is sit it out and wait till it's done.
Yeah. But going back to ageism.
Yeah. So I think there's a sort of, particularly, it is a problem for men as well, but I think particularly for women, I've noticed that one thing that's great in the 10 years that I've been doing stand-up, and I think because of my age, people think I've been doing it a lot longer than that, but I haven't. But even in that relatively short time, there's a huge sea change in the amount of female comics on TV now, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's getting close to 50-50 on TV shows. It is, the representation's there. A young girl now watching comedy on telly isn't going to think, that's not for me, that's for the boys, which is brilliant. But a thing I have noticed, and I think it's it's largely because of things like Instagram, because we're so visually focused now, that, yes, there are more women on telly, but the beauty standards for women on telly have got higher.
Yeah.
So previously, if you were a comedian, it doesn't matter what you look like, right? You're telling, and for men, I think that's still the case. You know, there's a vast range of, from good looking to not good looking men on TV doing comedy. That's not a consideration, really. You don't have to be hot to be a man.
No. In fact, it goes against, if you're a hot man, it goes against you.
Yeah, it can do, because people, you know, it's that idea that people aren't listening to what you're saying if they're just lusting after you or whatever. And also, because I think as a male comic, you want the lads to be on your side, right? So if they're worried their bird fancies you, they're not on your side. But I've just noticed that more and more it seems to be that there are, and I'm not saying that the women that are fronting a lot of comedy shows aren't good comedians. I'm just saying that now you have to be a good comedian and, if at all possible, be fit and skinny.
Yeah,
and,
or if you're not, if you're not at what they see, what they deem to be, you know, good looking or whatever, fit or whatever it is. If you're like a larger person, or, you know, so you have to be quirky, then you have to be quirky, or you have to dress in a certain way to kind of, like, almost look eccentric, or do you know what I mean? Like, have a bit, be a bit quirky. You can't just be yourself.
Yeah, you can't just be a normal woman on TV. Yeah. Yet TV is full of normal looking men, full of them.
Mm.
Yeah, and that I find really frustrating because it, what, you know, it's just not quite what we were aiming for. Like, yeah, we're getting there, we're getting close, and then suddenly there's this, oh, but now you have to have a stylist. And, but, you know, the amount of female comics that have stylists now, that blows my mind. When I first started doing telly, it didn't even occur to me to get someone to style me.
No.
Which is probably very evident from what I wear on telly.
You always look great.
But, you know, I just, yeah, it's just that it's not something I give a toss about and not something I want to spend my money on, to be honest.
No, you should be able to just wear whatever you
should be able to just
you're
be
comfortable with. Yeah.
Yeah. And this idea that, that you have to be visually pleasing as well. And it's not just in comedy, it's across TV, full stop, really, that if you're a woman that men can't imagine wanting to have sex with, then why are you there?
Yeah, I think that's just, I think that's across the board. I don't even think it's in the arts or entertainment. I think it's in all walks of life still. There's still that, you know, there's that thing of, the you know, the, there's a person that'll be, like, hugely qualified for the role, might not get it because of what they look like.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and whereas another person that hasn't got that, not as qualified, but is more, I don't know, there's something else about them that's, you know, more aesthetically pleasing, yeah, maybe, and they'll get the job.
I think it's one of the biggest sort of isms that we don't like to confront, is people being judged on how they look, because we all do it. We all judge people on how they look. But it is really reinforced by media and making that gender difference of, you know, because in real life, we know intellectually that, you know, your Instagram influencers don't look like that if you met them on the street. You know, we know that. So why don't we accept that on our screens? Why on our screens do we have to see this perfect version of people?
Yeah.
You know, and it's such an impossible standard. And so to a young girl who wants to be a comedian now, I feel like you've got to say, well, you better start learning how to do makeup and how to wear clothes and how to... That shouldn't be part of it.
No, shouldn't. Not at all. It's just be funny. Are you funny?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I mean, I, you know, as a woman who has the audacity to be on telly sometimes, I often get abuse on Twitter or whatever. You know, it's just part of the package. A lot of it is about how I look in a way that a male comic just doesn't get. They just don't.
No, you're right, actually. I've seen everybody that's women that are on telly, you do get so much shit.
Mm.
And like watching like the shit that people got from all television programs, Traitors and everything, Lovely Apollo, everything. It's always about how that person looks.
Yeah.
And it is women that get it. I rarely get people saying things to me about what I look like.
Yeah.
It's a funny one, isn't it? It's never, yeah,
it's,
I never get heckled
like, and also as a woman, it's about how you behave. Your behaviour is policed much more as a woman, because if you're not being what is deemed to be ladylike, then how dare you? The most abuse I've ever got for anything I've done on TV was from doing Richard Osman's House of Games, which is a tea time quiz show, for goodness sake, right?
Yeah.
And one of my favourite things I've ever done, but I had the audacity to be good at it. And people didn't like it, that they felt I should have been more, and I wasn't, you know, I've watched it back, I wasn't like being, haha, look at me, I'm brilliant at this. That's not in my nature to be like that. I was just, it's just, was in my skill set. I was just good at it. And so, and it just so happened, particularly the first time I did it, the people I were on with weren't so good at it. And so I kept winning. And there was this idea that I should have set back and let them win. You know, like, as a working class woman or whatever, that I should have held back and not answered the questions. I'm like, do you know what? I fought my whole life with people underestimating my intelligence because of where I'm from and how I sound.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go on telly and pretend I don't know the answers to questions just so I don't hurt someone else's ego. I'm not going to do that.
No.
You know, and there's this idea that there's a way that you should behave, that you should be demure, you should speak when spoken to, you know, don't have too many opinions. So as a woman on telly, you're your whole behaviour, your whole demeanour is policed in a way that it just isn't. You're allowed to be angry if you're a man. If you're angry as a woman on TV, you're hysterical and mad woman.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You're allowed that your opinions aren't as valid because you're obviously not as educated. You're obviously not as, you know, there's that calm down, dear, you don't know what you're talking about attitude.
Yeah.
Which is just bullshit, but that, you're policed in such a different way in the public eye as a woman, and it's not, it's, a lot of it's about how you look, but a lot of it is behaviour policing as well.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Whereas, yeah, like you say, a man can get away with a lot more being, it's, yeah. And do you know what, it's funny, talking about, even down to, like, we're talking about how you look, you look at, when you look at fashion, like clothes shops and things like that, and they'll call it plus size. When it's a woman, it's plus size. Oh, look at her. This is a plus. This is for plus size people. But when it's men, it's like, and these jeans come in triple XL. Like it's like, yeah, mighty and strong. It's like, yeah, look at you, big man.
Big hero,
you,
man.
Oh, look at you. Yeah. Your jeans are bigger than your car. Fucking. Whereas women, it's like, well, this is, oh, look at you. You've,
well, it's the taking, yeah, up of space. People don't like it when women take up too much space. Be that in physically, be that in a conversation, be that in a game. If, you know, how dare you talk when there's men around who should be talking? How dare you take that space? How dare you fill that gap? You know, there's, yeah, a, you have to be small and you have to, you know, keep yourself in check a bit as a woman. You're not allowed to misbehave. You're not allowed to step out of order or play or take up space.
Yeah. And then there's that thing of employers will would rather take on a man than a woman for a role because they go, and there's that excuse of, well, you know, she'll probably go off and want to have babies.
Oh, mate. What? Do you know, I won't name them because I didn't get this firsthand. I got this through a colleague. But there is a comedy club. And recently, the promoter, I'll tell you who it was off air, Rich. But,
yeah, 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 all right.
Where the promoter literally said to a woman, and thought it was perfectly fine to say this, that the reason they don't book many women is because they get women in as regular comics, and then what if they go and have babies and then they can't gig for a year? What are you talking about? And also, so this colleague of mine responded by sending him loads of photos of female comedians doing their job while heavily pregnant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's loads of, like, you know, Catherine Ryan's been on telly doing stand-up heavily pregnant. Several people have done the Apollo, yeah, while
Kelly
heavily
Convy.
Pregnant. Kelly Convy. You know, it's bullshit. Yeah. But also, even if it wasn't bullshit, what are you talking about? We don't work for you full-time. You're not... What? That's not, yeah, a reason, yeah, yeah, to not book a woman comedian because some point down the line she might have a baby and you can't book her for a year. Yeah. So book try someone else for that year.
You're probably, what, not going to. The thing is, you do a club. You know, you don't do them all the time anyway. Like you said, you, yeah, do it every few months or every year. So it makes no fucking difference.
It was such a mad thing. He was obviously so desperately trying to come up with excuses as to why his booking policy was so shit.
Yeah. I mean,
and that was the best, yeah, he could come up with.
I mean, don't get me. I understand that because I have this conversation with a few bookers because they're always, when they turn around and they go, right, do you know of any newer acts that are coming through that are any good? And you always give the list. And that's how you make a difference. By, like the other day, I got asked for, do you know of any like decent female comedians that can MC? I sent him this big list. And that's how you make the changes, yeah, is, you know what I mean? Like, don't be in a green room with a promoter and go, oh, by the way, I see there's no women on this bill. I'm not going on. That's not how you do it. You're going to, yeah, fuck, you know. But
you're just going to get people's backs up.
Yeah.
But there is a way to point
there's
it out. I think
it.
There's nice,
yeah,
ways to point it out because I do think sometimes promoters, because it's so ingrained, I think sometimes they don't notice, no, that their bills don't have any women in it. They just don't notice.
Mm.
And so if you do start getting arsy, going, well, there's no women on this bill, whatever. But I also do think it can't always be us pointing it out because then it looks like sour grapes and it looks like bitterness. If we're, yeah, always, the men on those, who are on those bills, it has to come from them,
yeah,
as well. Otherwise, nothing changes. It has to be, if you're sat, you know, as a male comic and you're constantly in green rooms with no women in, just point it out. You don't have to do it aggressively. You don't have to do it meanly. You don't have to start putting down ultimatums. But just say, what happened this week? Could you not find But then
the thing is, though, that is going to wind some people up. It's a very tricky thing to do.
That might not be a good way to put it. But do you know what I mean? It can't just come. We shouldn't have to be the ones constantly pointing it out.
But that's what I mean. So when promoters ask you all the time, who's decent? Or what I've done a few times is just I've gone, I love your club. I think you should have a look at these people. These are really cool.
Yeah.
You know, put their
that's
names
the way
forward.
To do
that. Yeah.
Yeah, after the gig, just go, by the way, I've seen these people, they're really good, you might want to get them in for your club. And hopefully that's enough for them to go, oh, these people are all women. That's an interesting thing that you sent me that. You know, because I do think that there's that fear of going, oh, well, if I rock the boat and if I piss them off, then they won't book me. Go, well, you've got that privilege of being booked by them anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like,
It's a tricky one.
Either stand up or be an ally or don't. It's a tricky one to manoeuvre. No one's asking you to lose work. No. But also, we're losing work because they won't book us.
Yeah, I know. But I think that's the way. I think rather than stood in the green room going, oh, mate, I know. Because the other thing is, because booking gigs myself, you know that you'll book people and last minute they'll pull out because they've got... thing is, there are fewer women doing comedy and so there are fewer women... that are on a level that are, you know, for these other clubs or TV or whatever. Yeah. So when someone's on that level and something comes along, of course they've got to take the opportunity. So they're going to take that gig out. And it's not, they have
and
to.
And I do get that argument. Yeah. And I know that does happen a lot. And I do understand that argument of availability. Mm. However, if a club is routinely booking all male lineups, then that's not their excuse. They're just not looking in the right places. You know, the amount of times I've seen that excuse and I've been like, well, I was sat at home that night. I would have done it if they'd phoned me.
They didn't phone me. Yeah.
You know, you can only use that excuse so much that the women aren't available. Because I'm in a group of female comedians in a WhatsApp group. You know, you'll post something going, did any of you get asked to do this, by the way? Mm. None of them have. No. You're like, well, then they can't use that excuse, can they?
Yeah.
If none of us that are all pro comics who do the clubs have actually been asked.
Yeah.
And I think it's a difference between it being a one-off, and I know that happens sometimes, you can't help it. I know, I've booked gigs, I know what it's like, people pull out last minute and you just got to get whoever's available, of course.
Yeah.
But if it's routinely happening.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to go. And also, who's in your phone book that you only ever managed to replace them with a man? Were there women available? You just don't have their contact details.
You've got everyone's
contact details. Mate, that's your job as a promoter.
To make sure
you're on top of who's coming through and you can contact them.
Yeah. Or if you haven't.
Sometimes it's laziness.
Yeah. If you haven't, then look at the bill and go, actually, I could do with... Isn't that, sometimes you do get that. You get people posting, I need someone to replace someone for this gig, but I really need someone that isn't a straight white dude. And you go, that's fair enough. That's how you do it. Specify and you know, make... that's how you make those changes. As far as I can see, there's very few people now that aren't making an effort. There are still a few that kind of... it's still a couple that go, fuck it, I don't give a shit, it's my club. And you go, oh, I can't argue with that either. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But there are some, like you say, it's just... they'll just stick to the same names.
They've known the same people for 30 years. So they phone up the same people. That's just laziness. That's just... and you go, well, that will... you know, it's very interesting when you look at what's happened with the Comedy Store in London, which used to have that problem big time.
Mm.
And then it really shifted its sort of mindset, really, and was like, oh, actually... and now the lineups are so much more exciting and fun, and it's not the same four blokes doing jokes about their wives, you know, doing the same jokes about their wives.
Yeah.
It's different and it's exciting and fun. And I think people can see how that has really helped the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
You know, which is an exciting place to be again now.
Yeah.
You know, it shows... you might think like your club is the best it can be. Well, maybe it isn't. Maybe it could be better.
But I think that's the same, like we said, across the board with all... in all lines of employment. Mm. It's just that people just have that... a lot of these old fashioned men, and that's how they got to where they are. It's like, you know, it was nepotism or it was whatever it was.
Yeah.
That old fashioned kind of, you know, taking care of your mates, things like that. And
yeah.
you know, and if you're not in with those people, you're not going to get a look in. And sexism, yeah. Let's just fucking call it what it is. It's,
well, yeah.
Misogyny and really, sexism.
I really noticed after the pandemic, there was a real step backwards. So before the pandemic hit, I on my timeline, you know, there's lots of promoters, lots of comics on my Facebook feed. And I would see gig posters go up and they would start, like before the pandemic, they were getting really well mixed and it was really encouraging. I was like, yes. Then after the pandemic, it was suddenly all male lineups again. It was really weird how quickly that happened. And I was like, oh, it's just people after the pandemic have just rang their mates to get their mates work. And I get that. You go, everyone's had a tough time. My mate's not worked for 2 years. I'm going to get him into... You know, and I do understand why you do that, but it's very telling that all your mates are men because that's what you, they're who you've been booking longest.
I know.
You haven't got the same relationships yet with the female comics that you book, you know, yeah. Like, it's changing and it will change.
Yeah. It does take a while to get your head around it. Because years ago, you just didn't think about it. You just kind of booked who you knew. So, you know, this is going back about 15 years. So yeah, I was just booking whoever was around. I didn't really think about it. It's not till now I'm booking gigs again. And it just takes a little bit more effort to go, right, I'm already MCing and I'm a straight white dude. So we probably don't need another one. So let's mix it up. And like I say, sometimes there was once I'd completely forgot to fucking book it and it was like a week before.
Doesn't sound like you, Rich.
Shit, I know. Yeah, it's because I go, oh, I've got ages. It's just one off. And so I did.
Because you've got ADHD, mate, yeah. But never mind, go ahead.
Oh, God. I'm going to be one of them. All right. You just takes a bit more. And there's a gig I book, and it's not a regular gig. And I remember I was MCing it, and I booked. It was all women, and I sent it to the promoter, and he went, "Oh right, yeah, that's cool." I went, "They're all brilliant. They've done Apollo. They've done this, that, and the other." And he went, "Right, yeah." He goes, "Oh, it's just that, you know, I don't know if people in the town might not be ready for that." And you go, "Yeah, but if we don't do it, then the people in the town aren't going to get used to it." And as it turned out, it was a fucking brilliant night. Everyone had a really good time.
That excuse is such a... really makes me laugh. That, oh, it's not me, it's the audience won't hack it. The audience don't give a fuck if you're funny.
No,
they don't
funny.
Give a fuck as long as you're funny.
Yeah.
And they're not counting. They're not... An audience isn't going, wait a minute, this is three women in a row. I just don't believe they're doing that. No. If they're three funny women in a row, and I'm sorry, you don't get to be on Live at the Apollo if you're not funny. You just don't.
No.
People go, oh, they were on Live at the Apollo, they're not funny. They must be. They must be funny. Otherwise, you don't get to do that show.
Yeah.
You know... And so they might not be your cup of tea, and that's a different thing. It's the thing that the comments I find easiest to ignore on Twitter or any, you know, social media at all are the ones that go, "You're not funny. Get off my telly. You're not funny. Why are you there? You're not funny." And I find them really easy to ignore because those people, all they're doing is showing their sense of entitlement, and it really makes me laugh. Because you ask anybody, right, individually, you go up to that person who's shouted at me that I'm not funny on Twitter. If I was to sit that person down and go, "Do you believe the following statement? People have different senses of humour." They would go, "Well, yeah, obviously, people have different senses of humour." And I go, "Right then, so why are you so angry that not everything on telly is catered to yours?
What makes
your sense of humour more important than anyone else's, that everything on TV has to be directly aimed at you, and everyone else can go fuck themselves?"
I know. Yeah.
You know, it's such a simple equation. You go, all you're actually showing me there is your sense of entitlement, that you think every bit of entertainment out there should be catered to you and your specific taste. Yeah. Well, fuck you. They're not. So tough shit.
They're the sort of people who be watching Top of the Pops back in the day and then ringing up, "Hello, is that ABBA?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you're shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've sold millions of records. Yeah, but I think you're shit. Yeah, but we wouldn't be on Top of the Pops if we were shit. No, you're shit."
It's just so funny. It's the same people as well that complain, like, if there's a celebrity show, like if there's a celebrity MasterChef or something's on, and you see them all on Twitter, "Celebrities, I've never heard of them." You go, "No, because you're 65 and you watch the same four channels. That's why you never heard of them." Like, you may not be aware of this, but there's an internet now.
Yeah.
And infinite ways of consuming entertainment. And do you know what? If that person has a million YouTube followers, They're famous, whether you know who they are or not.
Yeah. Just because you only know who's famous by if they're in Midsummer Murders.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, who do you think you are that you're the arbiter of what's famous and what isn't?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Do you know,
so
it's...
And that just don't bother me at all, because I'm like, oh, all you're doing is showing yourself up there as being an entitled prick. That's fine. You look like a dick here.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they have a dig at my, you know, oh, I get it a lot. My weight fluctuates a lot. You know, I've always been a yo-yo dieter. I'm one of those. I'm fat 1 minute, thin the next. That's just how my life is. And the amount of stuff I get about that. And even the ones that are trying to be kind piss me off. You know, I've had people go, oh, I've noticed you lost a lot of weight recently. I just want to check you're all right. Fuck off. Fuck off. That's my family's job to check I'm all right if I've lost a lot of weight. Not you, stranger on the internet. How dare you police my... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Because I remember growing up and, you'd be with family or whoever and you know, you'd be walking down the street and then you can hear, like, state of that, look at them. Or sitting in front of the telly and, what the fuck, look at that. I remember when Boy George turned up and everybody went, what the fuck?
What is that? I don't understand.
What is going? Yeah, they couldn't understand it. And they were like, that's a woman. You go, it doesn't fucking matter. They're still great. And so that's in my head. And I battle that all the time because it's obviously gone into, so I find myself walking down the street and I have this inner monologue where I walk down and I go, the fuck is that at? And I go, yeah, but they're just doing what they want to do. It makes no difference to you. Why are you bothered about it? And then I have to go, yeah, that's because of you. When your mum and dad used to walk down the street and they used to say things like that. And that goes on in my head all the time.
But also, I think, like, we're all human beings and human beings make judgments instantly.
It goes back to what we're saying.
Whether they're fair or not, right? We make judgments. And we always have and always will. And our thoughts that we have in those moments aren't who we are.
No.
Like, I've really learned that recently, is your thoughts aren't you. They're a voice in your head. And sometimes you have thoughts that can make you go, where the fuck did that come from? I must be an animal. They're just passing through your brain, right? You can choose to ignore them. You can look at them and go, well, that was interesting that you thought that. But the difference is, you might see someone walk down the street and think to yourself, Christ, look at the state of that. You don't put it on Twitter.
No, that's true.
And at that person in it. That's the difference. No. People are always going to have opinions about me. That people are always going to see me on the street and think I look fat, ugly, whatever. That's up to them. And their opinions, their thoughts are none of my business. What upsets me is when they tweet them to me.
Yeah.
And they make them my business.
They have to tell you.
They have to tell you because that only shows insecurity in their own life, because nobody's happy does that. Nobody's got a happy, carefree existence, feels the need to tear anyone down on Twitter. They don't.
But that's their thing, isn't it? That's what gives them, well, not pleasure, but it makes them feel better. It's like, I've now upset this person because some people just want to do that. They want to hurt someone in order to make themselves feel better. Yeah.
Because they're hurting and they see you on TV, and the assumption is, and it's an assumption that before I started doing telly, I probably would have made somewhere in my head, that if you're on telly, you must be A, rich, and B, happy. You must be, because you're on telly, right? Isn't that the dream? And particularly now, you know, the days of just a few appearances on telly making you rich are long gone. You know, I don't live in a mansion. I live in an ex-housing association flat. You know, that's the reality of it. but they've made these assumptions about you.
Yeah.
And I can't change those assumptions. But because their life isn't as good as they perceive yours to be, regardless of what your life is actually has going on in it, they feel they have to bring you down somehow because I'm feeling bad about something. I need you, happy person. How dare you be happy when I'm feeling this bad? There's a way I can make you feel bad.
Yeah.
And that's what it is, you know. And that's the thing I really did struggle with, and I still do occasionally, because, you know, none of us are perfect. Some days I look at what's written about me on Twitter and I can just ignore it. And other days it gets to you because you're human, you know. But what I find really weird about being in the public eye, or however you want to put it, is this idea that people have very fixed opinions about who you are, what you think, what you're like as a person.
Yeah.
They believe that they know that and they don't, you know? And I find that so weird that complete strangers, people I've never met, have opinions about who I am as a person. And that I find that can get to me sometimes when, you know, I people will go, oh, she's really cold, or she's really, oh, she's really selfish, or she's really this, that, and the other. And I'm like, I don't think I'm those things. Like, I've got loads of friends, and I'm, you know, or the sort of this idea that they know exactly who you are politically, they know exactly what you think, what your opinions are, what I find, that really freaked me out when people who never met me suddenly thought they knew me. Yeah. And now I just have to remind myself, they don't know me. They don't know me. They think they do, but they don't. And so it doesn't, their opinions don't matter. They're their business.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is as well, I'm different people at different times, like depending on where I've had enough sleep, depending on if I'm worried about something, depending on my blood sugar levels, if they're up or down or whatever. And, you know, and it's, so sometimes I can seem a bit of a prick. Sometimes I could seem like the best person you've ever met. It just depends where I'm at. But yeah. I think fundamentally, I'm, you know, all of us, we're pretty decent. It's just sometimes, and I'm more aware of it now. Like, if I've been a bit of a prick, I will message or ring up and go, listen, when I saw you earlier, I was a bit off. I'm really sorry about that. I'm just worried about this thing. And most people kind of go, yeah, it's all right, mate. Don't worry about it. You know,
we're
it's
all
fine.
Pricks when we're worried pricks about
at
something.
Times. Yeah. Yeah. We can all be dickheads, mate.
But there's that thing, if you meet someone in the street when you're having a bad day, you know, and somebody wants to talk to you, they don't know what is going on in your day. And then their interaction with you, if it's not what they want it to be.
Yeah.
They then go and tell everybody, I met that Angela Barnes. What a bitch. You know, and to everyone, and it could have been that I was running to get a train, or, you know, I just got some bad news or whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't in a place where I could have a selfie with you.
Yeah. And suddenly, I totally empathise with that, because we all do that. When I was little, I grew up in Maidstone, and my house was right near where they filmed Motormouth and Number 73. Although Saturday
morning.
So I used to go down there with my autograph book on a Saturday morning, you know, and get autographs of people. Oh, and sometimes people come out and they'd be happy to, and other times they'd be really rude or ignore us, or just, and you'd be like, oh, they're an arsehole. And actually now I think, maybe they've been up all night, you know. These were pop stars who were probably doing some, and then some, they've got to do some kids' TV show at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Of course they're in a bad mood, you know, or they've just met up with their boy, or whatever. You know, now I can look back, but at the time I would have been like, yeah, that person's a prick. They wouldn't
fuck that prick.
They would fuck that prick.
And then if you had Twitter back then, imagine.
God. Yeah. I probably would have been a troll. No, I would have been a troll. I don't think I would have been a troll. Worry too much about pleasing people to be a troll, I think.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah.
But that's it. We've talked about this before, about you growing up in Maidstone, because I grew up not far from you. Yeah. So we spoke about the fact that our dads hung out together.
That's so funny. We worked that out. We were in New Zealand, weren't we? So we grew up in the same manner.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, same ends, bruv. And but it's funny because you're very vocal about, you know, losing your dad at a young age, and it's every time you talk about him, it's always with a fondness and it's almost like that's how you sort of keep him alive and with you. It's just the way you talk about him is so lovely, and you talk about the fact that, you know, he had a sex shop, and it's not seedy. It's almost like stupid. You go, what? And it's ridiculous. It's a really nice way that you talk about him.
Yeah, thank you. That's lovely. The thing is, my dad died, so he was 60 when he died, which is, God, that's scarily young. You know, it's only 14 years older than I am now. That's terrifying when you think about it. And he died very suddenly. And the truth is, I don't think I would have found this job and this career if he hadn't died when he did, because it was that sort of made me go, right, life's short. What is it I actually want to do?
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to reconcile in your head, because I also feel like, and this might sound melodramatic, but we've talked about this before, Rich, you know, I was in a bad place when I was younger. Mm. I was mentally very unwell. And I think if I hadn't found stand-up comedy, this career where my unusualness, which I now know is ADHD, is accommodated, I don't think I'd still be here, because I found having a normal job very frustrating, very restrictive, and I was depressed for many years and medicated and, you know, very unwell. And so there's this weird sort of dichotomy in my brain, because obviously if you said to me now, you could have your dad back tomorrow, but you have to give up comedy, I'd give up comedy and have my dad back tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
But I also know how unhappy I would be if I hadn't found comedy.
Yeah.
And so there's this really weird, like, I feel guilty for relishing my career that I've only got because my dad died. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, so, it does, yeah.
Oh, you're relishing this thing. And the reality of it is that if your dad hadn't died, you wouldn't be doing it. Are you happy your dad died? Now you've got, you know.
Which is bollocks. Which is utter bollocks. Yeah.
Obviously bollocks, you know. And I did, you know, Griefcast, Carrie Ann Lloyd's podcast.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting sort of working, because it hadn't really occurred to me until I did that podcast. I was talking about that and going, oh yeah, there is this sort of conflict of going, I really love what I do for a living. I really love my job. I really love that I found it and it saved my life. However, my dad had to die for it to happen. Isn't that mad?
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
And I think that's why he features so much in what I do. My first Edinburgh show was about my dad. You know, I know it's a bit, I did a dead dad show. because that was such a thing that was forefront in my life, and the reason I was doing comedy. And the thing that makes me, the only thing really about my career that makes me really sad is that my dad never got to, not only did he never got to see me, get to see me do it, he never got to know I was doing it, because he loved comedy. My love of comedy came from my dad, and he would be loving it. Like he would be so excited with what I'm doing for a living. And I feel sad that he died worried about me rather than died going, oh, she's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's my biggest sadness, is that I know that when he died, he was worried for me rather than being like, I can go, she's fine.
Yeah. But like you say, you can take some solace in the fact that you know that he would be overjoyed. Yes, he was worried at the time. But if he's, you know, I don't know about life after death and all that sort of thing, but if he's around anywhere and he's fully aware of what you're up to, he'd be fucking proud, mate. And he'd be well chuffed. And
he'd be loving it.
And that's what you can take from it, you know. Yeah, he was taken far too soon. But, you know, he lived a life. He did.
Oh, he certainly did. And, you know, my dad was very much... He always said he was going to drop dead at 60. It was weird. He always used to say it when he was younger. And I'd be like, don't be stupid. You know, only the good die young, all of that. Mm. And he'd be like, no, well, because his dad had the same thing. His dad dropped dead at 60 as well. And my dad was a type 1 diabetic, and he was diagnosed when he was very young. But of course, he was diagnosed in the 50s, early 50s, when things just aren't quite like they are now for type 1 diabetics. And so the damage was done early on, really, in terms of heart problems. and he was so... As a sort of teenager in his 20s, he was so frustrated with his illness stopping him doing things he wanted to do. He didn't look after himself very well, because he just was like, fuck this illness. I rule it. It doesn't rule me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it does rule you to a certain extent. You've got to work with it.
Yeah.
And he didn't really. And so the damage was done. So he always lived his life thinking he was going to die young. So I don't think he died with regrets of things he didn't do. He certainly had fun. you know, so from that point of view, I think for me, for my relationship with my dad, you know, yes, my dad worked at a sex shop, was a swinger, was all sorts of, you know, debauchery, but I was his princess. Like, I was his little girl. You know, my relationship with him was a father daughter one, and a fairly liberal father daughter one, but not, you know, unnervingly so. It was a normal father daughter relationship, and I know he loved me, you know, and I felt nothing but love from my dad. And so I think that's why in my stand-up, in my comedy or whatever, I do talk about him a lot. He is there a lot, because it's important to me that he is, because he never physically got to see it.
Yeah.
It's important to me that he's part of it somehow.
But it just goes to show you as well that we talked about people being different people at different times. There's so many different facets to human beings. So yeah, your dad had that side of him, like you said, the sex shop, the swinging, the debauchery.
Yeah.
But then there was a side of him where he was a brilliant dad, and he loved his daughter. Yeah. And people can't get their head around it. They go, yeah, but he did all those other things. You go, well, that was a separate side. He wasn't taking his daughter fucking orgies, was he?
No, exactly.
You know.
What I always say about my dad, terrible husband, brilliant dad. And you can, those two things can can happen at the same time.
Yeah.
Because my parents split up when I was 9, I think. Mm. And to my mum's credit, she was never one of those parents that bad mouthed, even though my dad had obviously done the dirty on her.
Yeah.
You know, and she never, ever bad mouthed him to me as a kid. And that's hard to do that when you're a single mum suddenly and, you know, this person's treated you badly. It's very difficult not to let that show to the kids how you feel about this other person and what they've done to you.
Yeah.
And she never did. And she never stopped me seeing him. She never stopped our relationship. With my relationship with my dad being a strong one. She was never jealous of my relationship with my dad because I was a daddy's girl, really. Mm. You know, I think girls often are and boys are mummy's boys. You know, I think that often does happen that way. But she was never, she allowed that to happen. You know, she was fine with that happening. And that was so important because it meant those things were separate
mm.
from a very young age. That I knew my dad, you know, especially as I got older and understood how adult relationships worked, I knew that he was a little bit of a monkey, right? But I knew that my relationship with him was solid and that however many different relationships he was in, whatever he was doing in his, you know, extracurricular, his time with me was sacred. And he never, ever, you know, if he was due to have me for a weekend, he had me for the weekend. I never got palmed off. I never got like, oh, actually, I can't see you because I've got a better offer. My time with him was sacred. And that was, so you can be a shit husband, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're a shit dad.
No, that's it. And that's, I think that's what everybody needs to understand.
Yeah.
You know, there's different sides to us and we can
yeah,
be.
Absolutely.
One day,
different relationships.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are, you know, and getting your head around the fact that some people are going to like you, some people aren't. And so just that goes back to being a people pleaser. And I'm the same as you. I'm horrified when I find out someone doesn't like me. And you go, well, then you have to, and then, you know, you work it out and you go, well, not everyone can.
You can't like everyone. I don't like everyone.
No,
why should I
don't.
Expect people to like me? And also, I have this thing and I have to really stop myself. You know, it could be some awful racist, sexist, misogynist pig on Twitter saying something horrible about me and I'm like, what have I done to hurt you? And then you're like, why do I want this person to like me?
If I met this person
in the pub, I'd think they were a twat.
Yeah. We always want the approval of fucking dickheads. Like,
yeah.
There's people I know that they only really respect people that intimidate them. If you didn't intimidate them, they didn't give a fuck about you. It was just, they actually looked down on you. But
doesn't that speak to their relationships growing up? Like, doesn't that speak to, their parents must have been intimidating to go, if that's the only way you can demand respect by someone, then they must have had such a horribly intimidating parenting to be like that.
Yeah, definitely. It's exactly
you know. Because if anyone's got loving parents who care for them, then you don't, that's what you look for in other people, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
People. Wow. Eh?
People, eh? That's what this podcast should be called. People, eh?
People, eh? Well, this has been great, Angela. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Mate, I'm glad you it's funny, isn't it? The more you get into as we go into it, you kind of go, we got more energised, and then like you kind of like your cough and that kind of settled down.
Just settled down a bit,
yeah. It's great.
Yeah. I still sound like a teenage boy, but I've stopped coughing for a bit, so that's good.
But you're off on tour, mate.
I am off on tour. I am. Kicks off in February. Dates are all on my website, which is angelabarnescomedy.co.uk.
Lovely.
And we do the first leg in the spring and then there'll be more dates in the autumn. So if I'm not coming to a town near you yet, don't despair. Doesn't mean I'm not coming at all.
I'll get there at some point. Nice one, Angela. So this will come out. I don't know if this is coming out, but it'll come out soon. But anyway, listen, it's been a joy. I love you.
I love you too, Rich Wilson.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.